Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Local Government Division. Today is January 13th, and I will call the meeting to order. We'll begin with a roll call, and if Josh would begin.
I'm sorry, was that roll call?
Yes, please.
Okay, thank you. All righty. Chair Mason.
Present.
Vice Chair Elkins.
Present.
Representative Quam.
Present.
Representative Burke.
Present.
Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Hewitt.
Sorry, present.
Representative Mecklen.
Present.
Representative Olson.
Present.
Representative Joaquin.
Present.
All right. And a quorum is present.
That's good. Thank you so much. Maybe, Josh, you can keep track of this as we do the, since we're not at a table, we'll do the member introductions. Again, mention your name, mention the district, and describe your district a little bit, maybe one other fact as we go around. And my name is Sandra Mason. I represent District 51A, which is most of Egan, west of 35E and all of northern Burnsville. I served 8 years on the Egan City Council and numerous other city committees as well. And maybe we should take Representative Elkins next.
Sure. Steve Elkins, District 49B. I live in Bloomington and also represent parts of Edina, Eden Prairie, and Minnetonka. I was a planning commissioner and city council member in Bloomington on the city council for 9 years, and then also served on the for 8 years on the Metropolitan Council, which is under our jurisdiction, and was very actively involved in League of Cities at the regional, state, and national level as well. So I've got local government in my blood for a total of about 25 years at this point, and happy to see that Gary Carlson from the League of Minnesota Cities seems to be listening in this morning. So lots of good friends in those organizations.
And maybe at this point, Josh, Representative Quam, the Republican lead.
Just happy to start back up again and hopefully find some solutions for the people, represent part of Dodge, part of Olmsted County, the Rochester area, and have been involved in, you know, local government for most of the years I've been on. Just look forward to doing things better and more cooperative.
Thank you. Josh, maybe you could do the rest of the committee in alphabetical order.
Sorry. Representative Berg, if you would.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm Representative Kayla Berg. I represent 56B, which is Burnsville and a small corner of Lakeville. And I come from an organizing background in the labor movement and have been fortunate enough to work on economic, racial, and environmental justice issues. And I'm just really excited to see what we can do to make a positive impact on our communities here at the local level. Thank you.
And this is Representative Burke's first term, so welcome.
Representative, Representative Bolden.
Good morning. I'm Representative Liz Bolden. I am starting my first term as well, representing District 25B, which is Northern Rochester. My professional background is as a nurse, and I currently work in education and leadership. So very happy to be here.
Thank you.
Representative Hewitt.
Good morning, I'm Madam Chair and members. I am John Hewitt. I represent in the southern suburbs, Rosemount, Apple Valley, and Coates. This is my second term as a legislator, and I've never been on this committee before. I was on state government finance, so it kind of fed into that, but looking forward to seeing what we can do together as a committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Shane Mecklen. I'm in my second term. I represent District 15B, which is a good portion of Sherburne, Benton, a little bit of Morrison, a little bit of Wright counties. I'm new to this committee as well. I'm looking forward to it. As I mentioned the other day, you know, I am a residential building contractor, so I work often in my professional career with both building departments and zoning. So I'm really looking forward to what I learn here. Thank you.
Representative Olson.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Bjorn Olson. I'm from District 23A. That's Faribault County, Jackson County, Martin County, and a part of Watonwan County. And I guess I have about 10 voters in Blue Earth County. They just are on the other side of the street in Minnesota Lakes. So don't want to leave them out, I guess. I just finished up my second term as the mayor of Elmore, Minnesota. So I thought that local government would be a pretty great step for a newly elected state representative to jump into, having really been in the trenches in a small town. I have 663 people who live in Elmore, Minnesota, and I'm actually three blocks away from the state of Iowa. So I hope we can kind of do a little bit better. One thing I always had a problem with was, as the mayor, you know, you'd talk to people up there and they'd say, oh, you know, we got to get you this. And then there was really no one ever there to put it on the table and slide it across to me. And so that's what I'm really hoping to do, especially with my district, is put something on the table and actually slide it across and say, here's what we've got for you. So looking forward to this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Joaquin.
Thank you. I'm Cheryl Joaquin, and I represent Hopkins in St. Louis Park. We're about 10 miles west of Minneapolis, and I spent 9 years on the Hopkins City Council, so local government's near and dear to my heart. Looking forward to working with everybody.
Thank you. Yeah, I think we've got a really, really good group here. Next, we're going to hear from representatives of our local government organizations, and we'll start with Gary Carlson from the League of Minnesota Cities. And if you would introduce yourself and proceed.
Well, thank you, Chair Mason, and thank you all as members of one of the most important committees in the Minnesota Legislature. Thank you for serving and being part of the local government process. My name is Gary Carlson. I've been with the League of Minnesota Cities since 1991. And the League is basically a longstanding organization. We were founded in 1913, actually as an adjunct to the University of Minnesota Extension Service. We are governed by a board of directors that includes 19 city officials from across the state. We're a voluntary membership organization. We currently have, I think it's 834 of the 853 cities in the state as members of the League of Cities. And the 19 that are not members are all very small cities, even smaller than Representative Olson's city of Elmore. Most of them are under 200 population. And when they call the League of Cities with a question, a concern, we will take those calls and help those cities out as well. Briefly about the League, because we do a lot more than just work with legislators. We do a lot of things to help with the day-to-day operations of cities across the state. One of the things that we are about to undertake is our annual training for newly elected and experienced local officials. Just like the legislature has training for new legislators, when you join a city council or you become a mayor, there's a whole set of laws and rules and regulations that govern how you function. And one of the things we do and have done for many, many years is to conduct a newly elected training so city officials understand the nuances of the open meeting law and data practices issues, and even understand the basics of how cities are financed. So that's one of the big training endeavors that we undertake every year. We also provide investment services for cities. This is a voluntary program that if they choose to invest in a joint fund, we can pool their resources and secure better returns on those invested taxpayer proceeds. Kind of an aside to that is our assistant finance director spent a lot of time this last year working with cities on the distribution of the federal coronavirus relief funds. And there were many, many questions about how that money could be used. We spend a lot of time with Minnesota Management and Budget and with our city officials, educating them about the Treasury guidance on how those monies could be legally used. That was another big effort that was unexpected when we started last year. We're also an insurance company. Back in the late 70s, early 1980s, the cost of insuring city government and local governments was excessive. And so we formed under the umbrella of the League of Minnesota Cities Insurance Trust. We provide property, casualty, and workers' compensation coverage that's tailored to the needs of government. And most of the cities are members of those pools for insurance. We provide research and inquiry services. We have a group of attorneys that answer questions that cities have about the day-to-day functions of cities. We also have human resource expertise that also provides HR-related assistance to cities as they deal with employment law issues. And then finally, my department is the ones that you'll see around the Capitol the most, or you'll see in Zoom meetings, I guess I should say. There are seven of us that work on government-related activities or government affairs activities, six of whom are technically lobbyists, and we will be working with you in the local government committee on any issues that come forward. One of the foundational issues, I think, for all of the groups you're going to hear today is that why are we here? Well, keep in mind that Minnesota is essentially a Dillon rule state, and therefore we only have the powers expressly or implied to run our cities. And therefore we need to work with you as new issues arise, as emerging issues or technology changes, to make sure that state statute allows us to conduct the essential local government functions. So we have a real role and responsibility to work with you as partners at the state to make sure that the laws are crafted such that our city officials can continue to provide those important services. Let me just talk about a few things. In general, when your committee meets, you're going to probably see legislation related to a whole number of chapters of law. Chapter 410 deals with charter cities, Chapter 412 with statutory cities, Chapter 414 with annexation. All of the chapters in the 400 range, 471 deals with municipal rights, powers, and duties, 462 planning and zoning. Those are all areas of the law that the League of Cities and these other city organizations and county organizations will be working with you on. In addition, we work closely on data practice and open meeting law legislation in chapters 13 and 13D. Those issues may come before your committee for their impact on local governments. Let me mention that one area that's
definitely will, Gary.
One of the issue areas that we do not get involved with is metropolitan governance issues. Ms. Patricia Nauman with Metro Cities is the focal point for work on Met governance, Met Council, and metropolitan related issues, and she'll talk with you in a minute. So I just wanted to be clear on that particular issue. Members, we have provided you a handout in your materials today that is a brief summary of some of the issues, specific issues the League is going to be focused on. And I'd like just to mention a few of those very briefly in passing here. Our board of directors this year, well, our policy committees, which met all last summer, adopted about 200 policies related to city functions. The board of directors focused on a few of those, and they're listed on your handout as kind of priority issues for us, knowing that this was going to be a difficult legislative session given the pandemic and the need for remote legislating. So I will go through some of those in a minute, let me just say that this will be a challenge for all of us as we navigate the pandemic session. And please feel free to reach out to any of our staff as you have questions about impacts on cities or city perspectives. So looking at some of those specific issues, we divided those into three broad categories: allow cities to adequately navigate and respond to economic challenges. We know that the state has a longer term projected deficit as of the November forecast. And of course, everything that you deal with in terms of policy recommendations that will come down to local governments will likely have a financial impact. And so we always try to tie the two together, the cost of those policy changes, and make sure that our cities have adequate resources to finance the expectations that the state has on our local governments. So we'll be working probably more closely with the tax committees in both the House and Senate to make sure that our cities have the adequate tools to finance their operations, be that property tax authority, be that local government aid, all of those programs that provide funding for all of the things that local governments do. We also will be working with you to avoid unfunded mandates. You may hear this a lot. If you served at the local level, you probably are aware that sometimes the legislature has a great idea, but not necessarily the funding to implement that idea. And we frequently are recipients of, hey, can you guys do this for us? We'll be watching closely for unfunded mandates and working with you to try to make sure that we have the adequate resources to comply with those mandates that you may choose to enact. Let me mention, though, that we'll also be working on some existing mandates that have been enacted by the legislature in the past. One of those relates to a law that requires cities and even counties to continue paying health care for injured public safety officers. That would be police officers and firefighters. This requirement was originally fully funded by the state of Minnesota, but over the past number of years, that funding has slipped precipitously, and now most of the cost, the vast majority of that cost of extending that health insurance, has fallen on our cities and counties, and that's become a big financial burden. We'd like to find a way to work with you to fully fund that program or make modifications to reduce its financial impact. And then one other issue that will definitely come before this committee and was here last year. The new members will not know this, but we worked quite closely on an issue to repeal a law that is a one in the country law that applies to the compensation we can pay to local officials. Minnesota is the only state that restricts the compensation that can be paid to local officials. And it has become a problem for recruitment and retention of our highest level city officials. And we would like to still repeal that law. Representative Mason knows that bill well. She carried it for us last year. It made it to the House floor. We'll be working on that again because we're hearing from cities across the state, not just in the metro area, from Rochester and St. Cloud and Duluth, that this has become a big issue. Please let our cities make those decisions on what they need to pay to attract and retain important employees. The second broad category is to ensure that cities have tools to effectively respond to the COVID-19 pandemic. This is something we obviously had no idea about last January when the legislature convened, but now it has become a very pressing issue. We need to have flexibility in conducting our operations, and the legislature has granted us the ability to conduct electronic meetings so that we can continue to provide services and govern our cities. We do have some changes in those laws that we would like to bring your way this year. One is when cities hold hybrid meetings where some people are at City Hall and others are not, there's a limit on how many of those meetings a city official can remotely attend. We'd like to discuss that in light of this ongoing pandemic and the health-related challenges that even confront our city officials. Also on that front, last year, the legislature enacted a workers' compensation presumption that a public safety officer diagnosed with COVID was or had contracted that in the line of duty. Fortunately, we haven't seen a huge cost spike of that in terms of workers' compensation cost, but we want to continue to work with you such that if we see a big cost increase because of a high incidence of costly medical claims, that we can work with you to secure some funding to help offset those costs. We'll be working on housing issues, broadband issues. Those have become very important during the pandemic. Clearly, broadband and the lack thereof in some of our communities has become an economic development and an education issue. We have supported broadband funding and continuing to make sure that all Minnesotans have access to those essential tools for conducting business and education. And then finally, on that particular issue, we'll continue to work with our congressional delegation on additional funding for local governments. The recently enacted federal legislation did not include any additional assistance for local governments. Fortunately, the First CARES Act had quite a bit of money for our local governments that was very, very helpful in navigating the unexpected pandemic-related challenges. We'll be working with our congressional delegation on additional assistance. And then finally, I know I'm going a little bit long here, but we'd like to partner with the state to create safe and inclusive communities and address racial inequalities. This has become obviously a big issue in light of the killing of George Floyd last year. This is a challenge for our cities. We need to work both with the state and local governments to make sure that we develop policies and procedures that really do try to address many of these issues. One in particular, you did enact in the special session, I think it was the second special session last year, some important public safety reform efforts. We'd still like to work a little bit more around the arbitration process with public safety officers to ensure that cities have the tools necessary to address situations where officers may not behave appropriately. So, Madam Chair, with that, on the back of your handout is a list of the other league employees that work around the Capitol and their issue areas. I would encourage any member of the committee that has a question to contact us. We have a lot of resources back at the league office that can provide you factual information about running cities. We're always there to assist and be partners with you. So please take advantage of that. Madam Chair, I don't know if you want to have questions now or if you'd like me to stay on. I can certainly do that. But with that, I'll conclude my testimony.
Thank you. And my thought is that we would have questions for each testifier as soon as you finish. And right now, I'm not seeing any hands raised. Are there any questions from our members before we go on to the next testifier? Okay, I'm not seeing any. So thank you very, very much, Gary.
Thank you, Chair Mason.
Next, we have Cap O'Rourke from the Minnesota Association of Small Cities.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members. My name is Cap O'Rourke. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Small Cities. The Minnesota Small Cities is, we have been around since the 1970s. We represent all cities that have populations of under 5,000. So of the 853 cities, there are approximately 705 cities with populations under 5,000. Our membership, we have cities with memberships as small, population sizes as small as 39, all the way up to populations just under that 5,000 cap. All across the state, including in the metro, in the Venn diagram of city organizations, the league is obviously the big circle that kind of encompasses, and organizations like Metro Cities and the Coalition, also have pieces, and small cities kind of overlaps everybody. We have members, obviously the majority of our members are in greater Minnesota and outstate, but we also have members in the Twin Cities, in the metro region as well. And so we work alongside the league and kind of working with these small cities and advocating on their behalf. Some of our biggest issues heading into this session has been infrastructure. There are growing costs associated with infrastructure, most notably transportation. Our cities have do not have a dedicated transportation funding source. We have largely relied on the Small Streets Assistance Program. That the it's a formula that the legislature allocates money when they have when they do so, but it is not a dedicated funding. And we have not we did not get funding in that account in this last biennium. Another growing issue for us has been wastewater treatment costs and funds, as a lot of our communities are having to upgrade their facilities and their drinking water to meet with PCA standards. They're in the end creating systems that often serve more or created to serve more than what their population is for cost effectiveness, but they're not utilizing it. So we're seeing those costs. In this committee, you know, one thing that I came onto this job about a year and a half ago, and I would say one thing, as this committee looks at local requirements, the requirements for local government, our cities, our small cities often do, as Representative Olson knows, the requirements for small cities don't really change much between those and their larger counterparts. The only difference is our members often do it with, you know, one or two staff members. We joke that when sometimes when we have board meetings in person, when that was taking place, that there were at least two or three cities that were closed because the entire staff was with us. And so we have members who wear multiple hats of being the clerk, being the treasurer, collecting all the bills, often shoveling the streets and plowing the streets. And so when, as you are looking at legislation that has more requirements for some of these small cities, know that, you know, for any cities, know that the impact on small cities is huge. We have to file all our reports and make our reports to the state and be accountable just like our larger counterparts, but we're often doing it with staff who are greatly extended and taking on lots of duties. So that we're very sensitive to some of the requirements and some of the new added issues of legislation that gets put for small cities. We look forward to working with your committee on a variety of issues and advocating on behalf of our member cities as much as possible.
Thank you very much. Again, are there any questions for this testifier? And it looks like I'm seeing none. So again, thank you very much. And I know we'll be talking to you in the near future. Next, I have Patricia Nauman.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Patricia Nauman. I hope you can hear me okay. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning. And congratulations to all the new members who have been recently elected. And it's nice to see you, Madam Chair. And congratulations to you as well. So I look forward to making a few comments for you this morning. Just very briefly, Metro Cities is a nonpartisan association that represents cities, the shared interests of metropolitan cities across the 7-county metropolitan region at the legislature, executive branch, and Metropolitan Council. The association does, it's a voluntary member association. It has about over 95% of the region's population in terms of city populations, and it is the only metropolitan-wide entity that does monitor and lobby on behalf of city interests at the Metropolitan Council. In fact, the association, a very major impetus for the creation of Metro Cities, and I'll just be clear here that our legal name is the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities, but we use Metro Cities because it's a little easier to say. But the association, the impetus for its creation, one big impetus was the establishment of the Metropolitan Council as that entity got established in the late 60s. And our association was established in the late 70s. And again, partly to make sure that cities had a voice at the Metropolitan Council. In addition, the association does lobby on behalf, again, of cities at the legislature on issues that are more statewide in nature, but that have metropolitan significance and interest for cities in the 7-county region. The association is governed by a 19-member board of directors that is made up of both elected and appointed city officials, in the metropolitan area and has a four-person permanent staff. Just very briefly, and I know Mr. Carlson also touched on sort of the processes for the league. Metro City's members do review, develop, and recommend the association's legislative policies and platform every year. And that is those are the positions that we do bring to you in the local government committee and certainly other committees in the legislature. Those policies do address probably about 80 plus policies in all, and they address a range of issues. I'll touch a little bit here in a minute on the issues and policies that are applicable to this committee, but widely they touch on transportation, revenues, taxes and aids, the state and local partnership, local authority and decision-making, housing funding and tools for local officials, economic development funding and resources, fiscal disparities, utilities, you know, sort of rates, sewer and wastewater, and environmental issues, among others. So as Mr. Carlson mentioned, Metro Cities is the entity that basically represents city interests at the Metropolitan Council, and in addition, covers all areas of sort of regional policy and funding activity that comes your way in the legislature that the legislature and state laws have jurisdiction over. So that does include things like regional governance, for example, which has been a pretty big topic of conversation in recent years. It also covers policies on comprehensive planning, the sewer availability charge for the region, the livable communities program, which is the purpose is set in state law. And basically all of the policies and activity that relate to the Metropolitan Council, our association does basically have positions on those issues. In addition, Mr. Carlson also mentioned state mandates. That's a key interest area for Metro Cities as well. Local authority and decision-making, you know, over things like land use and zoning, local public rights of way, budget and levy setting, pretty much the gamut. Local authority is pretty much a thread that runs through our policies. We want to make sure that cities do maintain the fundamental local authorities that they have, you know, the ability to act under. Other issues are things like building codes, organized waste collection, the salary cap, elections policy, and other statewide regulations that sort of over things like massage therapy or harmful substances, we do take an interest in. We look forward to working with you, Madam Chair and members. We just did send this week Metro City's legislative policies as well as our priorities for the year, some of which do apply to the work of this committee. Again, we have regional governance is a priority. The position of the association there really is about making sure that local officials have input into the selection of Metropolitan Council members, but we don't support having local officials on the council. And that's been a very steady priority and position for the association and for many years. We also do support a very strong state and local partnership. And we look forward to working with you on sort of all the areas that apply under that umbrella. I'd be happy to answer any questions. And certainly, even though we're not seeing each other in person, I'm happy to provide any information that you need as you do the work of your committee this year. Thank you very much for the opportunity to comment this morning.
Thank you. I see one question from Representative Elkins.
Yeah, Ms. Nauman, just one question for you. Do you anticipate, you know, wanting to work with us on developing legislation that would implement the Governor's Blue Ribbon Council on Metropolitan Government's recommendations? Basically, this latest Blue Ribbon Council has, come up with recommendations that pretty much mirror the recommendations by the Citizens League a few years ago and by Metro Cities itself, even before that. There's a very consistent thread of recommendations related to metropolitan governance that goes back now probably a decade in all. And Chair Mason and I have been discussing this. And so we've been watching all of the meetings of that Blue Ribbon Council. And now the question is, okay, who's actually going to draft the legislation? So I'm wondering if that's something that you would, if Metro Cities would want to work on with us.
Thank you. Pardon me. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Elkins, and it's nice to see you this morning. Yes, and Representative Mason, and I know we've worked closely with you on these issues for years as well, did carry a bill for Metro Cities last year that essentially did, I would say, really closely mirror the recommendations of that commission. Maybe there were a few pieces in there that were distinct, but yes, very much so. We have consistently supported staggered terms, which is a recommendation of the commission, an expanded nominating committee, which is a recommendation. A majority of local officials on that nominating committee we do support, as well as additional measures for public transparency. And if I could just add, Madam Chair and Representative Elkins, Governor Waltz, when he was elected governor, did actually, and when I had a chance to talk with him a couple of years ago, he had actually indicated he was interested in the positions of Metro Cities along this line. And he did create an expanded nominating committee that year when he was appointing members. And he did include a majority of local officials. So there is some precedent, at least for that, yeah, in practice. So, and we do, again, we've supported staggered terms for many, many years. And so again, yes, I'd be very happy to work with you both on those issues this year. And I will plan to touch base. I'll make a note and plan to touch base with you on those.
Thank you.
Thank you. Follow up,
Representative Elkins. Okay, thank you so much. Are there any other questions for Ms. Nauman? Okay, thank you very, very much for being here today. And I know we will be seeing you in the near future.
Thank you. Have a good day. Thank you, you too.
Thank you. Next, I have Jim Hovland, who's the mayor of Edina and the Municipal Legislative Commission.
Morning, Chair Mason and committee members. It's nice to be with you this morning for this introductory session. It's, I think, maybe one of the benefits of a virtual world. We get to have a conversation like this, and you guys have the time to spend time with us and learn a little bit about some of these organizations we represent. As Chair Mason mentioned, I'm the current mayor of Edina, just reelected to another four-year term. I'm also the chair of what's called the that sort of droll, drab name, the Municipal Legislative Commission. It's an organization actually formed years and years ago, back in the 80s. It now is composed of 19 suburban communities that stretch across the metro from Woodbury to Chanhassen and Maple Grove down to Prior Lake. Represents about a million in population and about 670,000 jobs. Those cities create about 23% of the state's sales tax. So they're real prosperous communities. Most of the cities don't get local government aid. And they are, I think, of the four of the five top contributors to fiscal disparities are located within the Municipal Legislative Commission membership. So I'm also the chair of the Regional Council of Mayors, co-chair, the Regional Council of Mayors, and then also involved in a group. I was thinking of Representative Olson as a former mayor of Elmore. I'm involved in a relatively new group called Minnesota Mayors Together. And someone mentioned broadband earlier, and one of our first strategies for mayors across the state is to work on a stronger broadband system to make this part of our infrastructure. So that we have the fastest, most load-worthy system that we can have all the way across the state to make sure that we can do commerce and get our kids educated as well as we possibly can. So for the Municipal Legislative Commission, we have some legislative priorities. I supplied those to Peter, I think, Peter Strohmeyer. You should have those available to you. It's a two-page document for us, talks about some of the things I just mentioned. Our top priorities this year are similar to some of the other organizations. We're, of course, interested in economic recovery and being cities that have a tremendous amount of commerce going on in them, as witnessed by the property tax levels that we have, the property tax levels that we have and the sales tax revenues that we generate. We're trying to be mindful of that desire to return to a full and robust open economy and people's full range of individual freedoms balanced against, of course, the need for keeping people as healthy as we possibly can in that process. And for you at the legislature and for the rest of us that serve as local elected officials, that's a tightrope walk. And for the governor and his team as well, it's very, very difficult work as we try to thread that needle. On the economic recovery side, of course, we've got strong support for small business. I think that first CARES Act, those first CARES Act monies provided some assistance, but we're going to be there at the Capitol visiting with you about how to continue to support small business and get them back on their feet. We support increased investments in the Minnesota Investment Fund and also in the Job Creation Fund. So as you can see in that portion of our legislative priorities involving economic recovery, we are real supportive, as I'm sure all of you are, of those various programs. To transportation and infrastructure, and I certainly consider broadband, as I mentioned earlier, infrastructure, part of our vital infrastructure. We support a transportation bill that is very comprehensive in nature. I think that's something the legislature ought to be contemplating here. Money could never be cheaper to borrow. There are lots of projects out there to deal with. I think Cap O'Rourke talked about some of the challenges that are facing the cities that he represents. And it just seems to me like a moment in time where we can really do some significant things throughout the state with respect to improving our transportation infrastructure so that we can more effectively and efficiently move people and goods. We're also very supportive of what we've seen in success through application, the Transportation Economic Development Fund, this TED program that the state has used. And then this Corridors of Commerce program that the legislature has been good at supporting. We see tremendous success in those two programs and want those to continue and maybe be even stronger in the future. And then we've also got a position on supporting infrastructure fees to make sure that our towns function as well as they can from an infrastructure standpoint. We, of course, as local government, like local control, and I think the legislature typically is an ally in that regard. We want to preserve local authority and land use and development activity. I have some other things on our one pager that you can see that deal with local government control. And I'm sure we'll be back to the legislature as issues come up that you need guidance on and some input on so that you can make well-reasoned decisions. And I look forward to that activity as well. And then to the issue that Representative Elkins just raised, I also serve as chair of the Transportation Advisory Board to the Metropolitan Council and just finished a stint with a group of people, about 15 in number, I think, that did that blue ribbon panel work on the metropolitan governance model that both Patty Nauman and Representative Elkins alluded to. So to the extent that you need insight on that, I'm sure that we'll have folks, including our chair, Mary Liz Holberg, that'll be pleased to come over and testify and provide any insight you need in that particular area. So I think from an introductory standpoint, Chair Mason, that's good for me, and we'll look forward to seeing all of you during the session. It would be wonderful if we could see each other in person. We'll see how the vaccination rate goes. We know this vaccination rate and the recovery of our economy are inextricably tied. So I think that's one of the other things that I hope you can influence is that we get people vaccinated as quickly as possible. Thank you for your time this morning. It's nice to be with all of you.
Thank you. I'm not seeing any questions. Are there any questions for this testifier? I see none. So again, thank you so much. And I know we'll be working together.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next, I have Steve Fenske from the Minnesota Association of Townships.
Good morning, Chair Mason. Thank you for having me and for all of these groups. We have a lot of overlap here. I think this group, all these folks you've heard from work really well together. That's why you're going to hear a lot of the same issues from a lot of us today. Again, I'm Steve Fenske. I'm counsel for the Minnesota Association of Townships. I'll just call it MAT or MAT for short. Keep this a little easier. Our organization is a nonprofit company that serves township governments. We serve 1,780 township governments. There's only one in the state that is not a member. That represents about 9,000 elected officials. And there are roughly 950,000 residents in townships across the state. The organization is governed by a 13-member board that provides some regional representation from all over the state. And we have a staff of 13 individuals that serve our townships. Our missions are primarily charitable and educational. And as part of the education, we run 30 to 40 in-person trainings in a normal year. This is not another normal year here, but in a normal year, we get out to all areas of the state and work with our members there. We have an online information library, about 100 documents specific to town law. We do a magazine about 5 times a year with timely topics related to township governance, and we do some published materials. We also offer a call-in or email service that any of our members can use. They call in with their questions or emails, and the attorneys in our office or the clerk trainers can provide them some help and direction, all aiming to help them do a better job, do it faster. I think it was Cap earlier said a lot of these folks are in very small communities. They may not have a staff. And so these officers are wearing many hats at one time. They're making decisions, but they're also shoveling the walk. They're operating the grader. So they have a lot on their plate, and they do it for very low cost. They take a very responsible approach to their spending. We also run a township insurance program similar to the League's program. We manage that from our office. And we're the voice for townships at the Capitol and with the federal level. We're the only statewide township group. So if you do have questions about townships, we're a good place to start. And we can certainly try to connect you with anyone you need, either answer your question or sometimes troubleshoot problems you may have heard about. That includes any legislative issues. If you have questions, we exist also to serve as a resource to the legislature. So I'm gonna explain a little bit about townships. As if you grew up inside the metro like I did, you may not have known what they were. They are so low profile that you often don't know they exist. They are a unit of local government, very similar to cities. You can think of them as the same layer of government. They are sometimes, I describe them as the places between the cities because people have a hard time putting them into context. They're exercising powers and duties that are reflective of their nature, meaning they're agricultural or they're rural. So whereas cities, you'll have powers that are related to economic development and managing density and providing services on a larger scale, townships have a different set of powers, okay? If you've driven on a gravel road or dirt road, you've probably been in a township. That's one of the things they manage. They manage over 55,000 miles of road, often gravel, at low cost. They're kind of the first mile. People talk about the last mile in the broadband context. Well, townships are often the first mile in agricultural context. It's the places that connect to farms. Townships are roughly 6 miles by 6 miles square. And I say roughly because that has changed. Some townships are more than that, and some have become smaller because cities start and they take part of the township land. So that's why some of them are larger, some of them are smaller. What you'll also see sometimes is something called unorganized townships. You'll see that on maps. When you see that, think of that as unorganized territory. It's not a township at all. A town or township, those are interchangeable terms in law. They refer to an organized government, a town government. So they'll have a structure of local government most similar to a city. When folks refer to a town in common conversation, they usually mean city. And you heard that in the last speaker. He's like, well, talk about the town doing this. That means the city. When we say it, we do mean that township government as opposed to the city government. It is a confusing set of terms. Township boards are usually 3 or 5 people, and that's a decision for the voters. They get to decide whether they're going to have 3 or 5 elected representatives to govern their township. They typically meet once a month, sometimes more. Occasionally, they can get by with meeting less. They also have a clerk and a treasurer, and those folks end up doing a lot of the work of the township. As again, they don't have staff. They're very small, so these folks do a lot of it. The voters can modify their town government. For example, they can add the 2 extra supervisors, or they can make their clerk and their treasurer appointed instead of elected, or they can combine the clerk and treasurer. And the point of that is to raise the idea that in townships, voters have more to do. They have more power. What they do every year in March, the second Tuesday in March is Township Day. and they get together in their town halls or the old schoolhouse, or maybe it's a community center in the nearby city, and they have a town hall style meeting, and they talk about what they would like to do with the township in the upcoming year. And the most important thing they do is set their levy. They're the only group of Minnesotans who have a direct vote on their local property tax levy. It is an astonishing power. It's remarkable to watch people raise taxes on themselves. They're going to have to pay it, and they vote to do it because they've been convinced that there's something they need to do as a community. Or other times, they feel they have enough in the bank, and I've seen them zero out the levy for the year. It's amazing to watch. They have other sets of powers that they can use, but all of them are dedicated in law. You heard earlier, Gary mentioned there's things that all their powers and duties come from a statute. So the voters, too, are regulated by statute. Here's the things you can do. But in towns, they get a much more direct voice on what they're going to do with that township in addition to their elected officers. About two-thirds of townships hold their election on that township day in March. So you'll see that you have an election day that second Tuesday in March. That's townships. The other third have chosen to go to November elections. Again, they can do that to combine them. Some feel that they get better turnout if they combine it with the November election. It does change the length of the terms for those folks. Part of the handouts you received, one was a basic introduction to townships. The other was a list of the legislative priorities that our members have brought up. There's about two pages there. Transportation is the biggest issue for townships year over year, and you won't hear a lot about that here. Issues you will hear about in local government, overall, the outlook is to keep local control. Townships believe in that. They believe they can be responsive that way. And in a lot of these communities, if you need help with something, you call up the supervisor and you can get immediate help. Maybe somebody needs to get up for an early appointment the next morning, there's snow, they call and they can get that person's roads plowed out. It's very responsive that way. And so they prefer local control. That's what you'll see in that handout. As far as specific issues, you've heard about broadband. That's one of the big issues we have that you'll be hearing about. Townships remain the places that are least connected. So you'll be hearing about that. You'll also hear from us about annexation. Annexation is the process of moving property from a township into a city. And what we're looking for in that is some fairness in how annexation is done, a little bit of annexation reform. Likewise, a process of detachment, which is the reverse. Occasionally, areas of a city to move back into a township. And we're looking for some changes to that law as well. We would also like to protect the town aid formula, which provides some funding to townships. They're largely property tax dependent. So you'll also see elements on our priorities to protect property tax base. It's because they rely about 75% on local property taxes. That's the biggest portion of their funding. I think with that, I'm gonna leave it there. Madam Chair, thank you for the time. I appreciate it. You're on mute.
Representative Quam has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Fenske. When we had the flood and many rural areas were hit in southern Minnesota, a lot of us saw the cattle being swept away down the stream on that video nationwide that was covered. That was in my district. And when I met with the townships, one of the biggest issues was cash flow to quickly repair roads so there was access for taking care of other issues. I talked with the administration then when they had a meeting, and I said, is there any way that you can accelerate the disbursements to a township, you know, that you get across the year up front if there's a disaster area declared, so they have the money instead of having to take out a loan to take care of some of those road and construction issues, so you can have the people of the township have the access to recover from the disaster. And the other thing is there any enabling language? I know there's a new CTOS that test that went fine, enabling language for townships to be able to interact with the state more easily. And I'll let you try and address those issues.
Sure. So on the road issue, townships. Thank you. Sorry. Townships on the road issue have they have a fair amount of problems. In particular, in Southeast Minnesota, year over year we see flooding issues, and they work with FEMA. The trouble being, it takes so long, and there's so much work to do to get their reimbursements. And the reimbursements, they don't necessarily have cash up front. So, if there were a way to help get funding to townships, whether that's disaster grant aid or even low or no interest loans from the state before they get their tax disbursement, I think a lot would use that. I think it would be very helpful for some rather than having to go and bond or get certificates, which they're going to have to pay something on. I'd be happy to work on that. That would be helpful. I imagine not only to townships, but some cities that face that as well. On the second issue, on CTAS, that's the accounting software put together by the state auditor. Towns, cities, and possibly counties use it. I'm not sure if they're used with it. I'm not sure on the question. If you're saying providing reports, that's one of the main things townships do with it. They submit reports to the auditor. I think that's a good program, and it does that very well. Representative, I'm not sure what the question is on CTAS. Can you elaborate more for me?
Madam Chair, thank you. And that was just meant as an example of how we're making it easier to interact with state. And I'd like other ideas that would facilitate the ease of interaction of small local governments, towns and townships, being able to interact with the state. When you have part-time people doing the government action, it's much tougher, and we should try and make it easier. And so that was the hope, is while this software works nice, if we only had X, Y, and Z, and that's what the question was meant. Example, and then what else you might have that I don't realize.
Thank you.
Mr. Fenske.
Yes, thank you. So yes, absolutely. That program is a huge help to our townships and municipalities to help them do their accounting and submit reports. We'd be happy to provide some of those things. I think some of those kind of forms and things that make it easier to govern, we provide on behalf of townships. And I know that the league does as well on behalf of cities. If there's particular issues, please reach out to us and we'll see if we have a form or something that's ready to go to help townships make whatever process they're involved in a little bit easier.
Follow up? Representative Quam?
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you.
I am not seeing any other questions. So again, thank you very much, Mr. Fenske. Next we have Matthew Hilgard from the Association of Minnesota Counties.
Good morning, Chair Mason. Thank you very much for allowing us to be here. Good morning, members. I've had the honor to build some relationships with many of the members on this committee throughout the past several years, and I'm looking forward to doing the same with the new members. I would congratulate folks because I think that this committee has had a history of great collaboration and bipartisan work. And it should be no surprise because many of you have local government experience. And that's what's demanded of local governments day in and day out. So it's always refreshing to participate in this committee, and welcome to you all. The Association of Minnesota Counties has been around since the 1909, I believe, is the year that we were started. We represent all of Minnesota's 87 counties. Similar to the League of Minnesota Cities, we are a membership-based organization that is nonpartisan and also voluntary. So we represent all 87 counties in the state of Minnesota. We are governed by a board of directors that is elected county commissioners. They provide our direction to our association, and we split our work between kind of two efforts. One is education and professionalism of county governments. That includes commissioners and staff and professional affiliate groups. And the other is being the voice for counties, both at a state government and a federal level as well, since many of our federal funding streams for some of our health and human services programs come through the federal government rather than the state government. I'd pause because I think county governments are one of those monoliths that a lot of people have a tough time figuring out. They know county governments exist, but what do they do, right? We're similar to cities. We're not similar to cities. We are an arm of the state government. Are we the arm of the state government locally? So I'm just going to give a few examples of what we do. Folks may be familiar, but one of our biggest tasks that differentiate us from other local governments is that we run many of the social safety net services on behalf of the state of Minnesota. Minnesota is one is unique. We're one of maybe 10 states nationally where we say, hey, we're going to have our county governments run our social safety net programs at a local level. We think it's more cost effective. We also think that it gives a more local control to decide what's appropriate for service levels to our local residents. We run the child protection system for the state of Minnesota as well. County jails, county corrections and probation services. If folks are familiar with the county sheriff departments, of course, in the transportation realm, there are many thousands of miles of county highways, roads, transit that we collaborate and work with cities on, as well as regional bike and pedestrian trails. County parks are operated across the state. The property tax administration system. So every county assessment, property tax codes. Chair Joachim is on this committee as well. She's very familiar with the county role and making sure that our property tax system operates effectively throughout the state and at a local level. We, along with cities and townships, are the main administrators of our state's elections. And we're quite busy this last year in a presidential election season. County regional libraries are a big part of what we do, as well as solid waste management recycling center. Some of your counties, Dakota, Ramsey County, et cetera, Hennepin County, and some of the regional centers as well across the state operate their own solid waste management systems, recycling centers, things like that. License centers, departments, birth records, land departments, ditch maintenance, and also broadband. This is not a comprehensive list, but just meant to be illustrative of some of the things that county's doing. And that list seems to be expanding every day that I work with the association. I found out the other day that counties are also responsible for indigent funeral expenses. So if a person cannot afford, or their family members cannot afford to properly bury their spouse or relative, counties actually come and work with a family to pick up those expenses and assist them in those matters. I want to pause also to say that this has been quite a busy year and unique year for counties and local governments. County governments received $467 million worth of taxpayer funds in the CARES program that legislators passed out or worked at least to help pass earlier this year. Many of those funds were used for external expenses within our communities. These were new tasks that counties had no prior history of doing, but you saw a lot of counties, all 87, frankly, set up programs to assist businesses. In the end, I believe that we spent over $167 million on businesses, nonprofits, and community partners. And it wasn't just business assistance. We helped with rental, food support. There were several counties who spent over $10 million on housing support, as well as homelessness reductions and folks to shelters, emergency shelter infrastructure for folks experiencing homelessness. And almost within the last month, we've also been in the news related to the new business relief funds that were passed in the legislature right at the end of 2020. So counties will be a main partner with the state in delivering $116 million out to your local businesses within your communities. As we look to this community's jurisdiction and the work that we're going to do next year, I think the cities and townships did a great job of highlighting some of the main things. We work very collaboratively with each other. A couple things that I would point out is that counties will probably come back to this group or some other jurisdictions as well to ask for some continued extensions of waivers that we've received. For many of these social safety net services, counties were issued either federal or state waivers to allow them to be more flexible with how they interface with the public, to do many of their tasks remotely. A great example of this is the marriage license certificate, which is required in person. Well, for the last year, we've been able to do that virtually thanks to Representative Dabney and Kiffmeyer's work in the Senate. Representative Becker Finn is carrying a bill that would allow us to continue that. We think that there are innovative ways and lessons that we have learned throughout the pandemic that make government more efficient and that we should update and be better in serving our customers. So we're looking forward to bringing some of those issues to this committee. I think open meeting law is another one of those areas where the law has been written, of course, and it might be dated to what we are actually facing in our current structure and world post-pandemic. And with that, and I'm sure I'll get some emails after this one, but I think it would be very, I think it would be great work if this committee, not necessarily this year, but in the coming years, would take a look at publication requirements as well. This is something that we've reached out to the Newspaper Association. We're very much looking forward to working with them, not against them, but to do something that balances the amount and quality of our postings, as well as cost and effectiveness for our taxpayers who are paying for that. So those are some of the issues. Our main issue, as folks said, is pandemic response, making sure that our communities are responding and getting the resources they need throughout this pandemic, as well as protecting any kind of property tax burden as we enter this next property tax payment cycle. And I will stop there. I will echo the calls of everyone. Everyone on this call, please, you know, feel free to see us as resources. I know all the other local government lobbyists. We are here to help you, even if sometimes that's against our own interests. That's our jobs. That's why we've been here for over 100 years. We are here for information, so please use us. Thank you, Chair Mason, and welcome new members.
Thank you so much. I see two questions right now. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Chair Mason. I'll learn that mute button soon. To the testifier, Madam Chair, I just have a simple question. Maybe you can or cannot answer it. But what I understand with, I'm going back to that marriage certificate deal. What I understand about the marriage law right now, for someone to be an officiant at a marriage ceremony, they have to be recognized by somewhat of a religious organization to get their credentialing. We really don't have a justice of the peace or anything like that. Is that the way you understand that? I mean, it seems like it's kind of cumbersome because you can't do it unless you're affiliated with a religious organization or a judge or something like that. Do you know much about that? And if so, we can talk offline, but it just seems confusing because also they have to register with each county too.
That's very interesting. Madam Chair, Representative Hewitt, that's very interesting. The angle that we were looking at was if someone was to get married, they still have to apply in person at the county. And the legislation that we worked on would say you still have to meet the notarization requirements, but you don't have to apply in person. Yours is the officiant requirements, which is a different angle. I'd be interested in following up with you and learning more on that, if you don't mind.
I do. I'd love to maybe work on something with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see. Representative Elkins has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Matt, I've been working with Irene Gao from the League of Minnesota Cities and Matt Ayling from the Minnesota Council on Government Information about an update to the open meeting law to just reflect the technologies and the process that we're actually using during the pandemic. So if you can reach out to Irene and get yourself plugged into that, we're about ready to have a bill drafted.
Chair Mason.
Chair Hilgard.
Chair Mason, Representative Elkins, absolutely. Tangentially, I've been included. Our staff person has been Leah Patton, and I think she has been included in your conversation. So thank you for including us in those.
Okay, thank you.
And that is the last question I see. So thank you very much. And we can now proceed to Matt Mossman from the Minnesota Inter-County Association. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Mason, and good morning, members. I am Matt Mossman, Executive Director of the Minnesota Inter-County Association. My congratulations as well to all of you on your election and Chair Mason on your role and to all of the new members, welcome, and I look forward to getting to know you better over the coming months. The Minnesota Inter-County Association is heading into its 50th year, founded in 1971. MICA is an independent voluntary association currently consisting of 15 of Minnesota's larger and faster growing counties, including suburban, exurban, and greater Minnesota counties. Just for a little bit of reference, our counties are home to just over one third of Minnesota residents. Our largest member county is Dakota, Madam Chair, as you know, and ranging down in size to Benton County. The list of entire list of our member counties is in some information that I think may be in your packets, but I submitted to the membership. I'll just quickly, it's we're Benton, Blue Earth, Carver, Chisago, Crow Wing, Dakota, Olmsted, Otter Tail, Rice, Scott, Sherburne, Stearns, St. Louis, Washington, and Winona, for those of you who might represent all or a portion of those counties. Again, I had mentioned just something that characterizes our counties. We do tend to be among some of the faster growing counties. Our membership includes four of the fastest five growing counties in terms of average annual growth over the last 5 years, and nine of the top 15. Mr. Hilgart did a fantastic job overviewing the work that county governments play in Minnesota and in the lives of Minnesotans on a daily basis. To say that we are an administrative arm of state government in Minnesota is I think, obviously not fully capturing the incredible footprint we have on the delivery of human services, corrections, transportation and mobility, public health, elections, and just a number of other issues. And of course, added to that list, livability issues with parks and trails and other amenities in our local communities. So we are member counties. Our role as an organization not only prioritizes engaging with all of you, as well as across counties, to bring forward information and analysis to the legislature that helps you have a good understanding of the impacts that state policy decisions will have both at the legislature and the actions of state agency work on counties, and making sure that we are collaborating and partnering with all of you to deliver services in the best possible way for Minnesotans. I would just organizationally highlight a couple things. Our board of directors consists of two commissioners from each of our member counties, and our board of directors, of course, sets our legislative priorities and platforms and meets monthly throughout the year to exchange information and provide guidance to our advocacy efforts and engagement with all of you. We're a small team. Our contact information is also included in the information that I provided, but we have a five-person team, three registered lobbyists, myself, Nancy Selesky, who works with our organization as a contract lobbyist and covers health and human services and public health, and Steve Novak, who works with our organization and covers, assists me with some bonding issues and also covers transportation and transit issues for us. One of the other key, I think, structural elements, just in terms of letting you know how we work and are organized, we facilitate and host a regular monthly meetings of a number of the experts, subject matter experts within our membership. So county administrators, fiscal officers, human service directors, and other key staff leaders within the counties on a monthly basis. And that supports our organization and hopefully supports all of you in your work by providing an agile opportunity both to gather input and insight into how state decisions will impact counties and bringing that information to you, as well as supporting the work of county governments as the state is making decisions. So just a couple things I wanted to touch on, because I think it's, you know, we're guiding principles that I hope that you will find positive. We try to make sure that we are working and advocating and conducting our analysis and research and engaging with all of you and with each other in a transparent and open communication way and in a collaborative way that addresses Minnesota's policy challenges with you. We feel strongly that good policy is grounded in good data and evidence-based solutions, and we try and promote that by doing analysis and information collection and dissemination for our member counties. We feel strongly that counties should participate in and be at the table with policymakers at the state for decisions that impact counties. And like you've heard from a number of other local government associations, really feel strongly that the state funding should cover the costs of mandated programs and processes. And a lot of times it's processes that can add to the work that county governments do on behalf of making sure programs are administered in a way that are required by the state. As well, just advancing local control and making sure that there's an alignment of funding accountability with the level of government that sets the program rules. Let me just talk a little bit about our intersection, Madam Chair and members. Also my thanks to all of you for your service on this committee. This committee, along with others, plays a critical role in impacting the work that we do at counties. And so I wanted to touch on a few issues. But overall, I want to say that, you know, like many of you, first and foremost, our priority I think is a shared interest with the state in terms of this legislative session, making sure that we continue to address COVID relief, protecting the public health and safety of Minnesotans, and also supporting economic recovery and relief, and doing all of that in a way that ensures equity and works to eliminate racial disparities. We have emphasized in part of that the intergovernmental finance issues. You will see us both with yourselves and across other committees wanting to urge the legislature to make sure that actions related to property tax policies, local government aids, and I know Chair Joachim is on the committee also, cost shares potentially in human services and other mandates do not increase pressure on local property taxes. We, in the context of our work, we also are strongly supportive of broadband funding, housing support assistance, and also looking at a number of areas of state mandate where counties are particularly underfunded relative to the statutory and initial original intent of the legislature. Community corrections and community supervision is one area in particular that we would like to see addressed this session. Just a couple of other issues. I think it was mentioned by the League of Minnesota Cities, Chair Mason, we support your leadership on the issue. We do encourage the legislature to look at eliminating the salary cap for non-school employees. We would note that school districts are not subject to the salary cap, and we don't think they should be, and we don't think that any other local governments should be subject to the salary cap either. We have in our platform a number of issues that I think generally can be categorized as just making sure that we maintain and support local control and flexibility over the opportunity for counties to manage county workforce and benefits. One example of that would be, for example, in the insurance pooling area, we believe that counties should have the opportunity, if they find it more cost-effective and efficient, to deliver the same level of healthcare benefits by pooling retirees and active employees separately, that they should have the opportunity to do that. And there are some other changes in that area that we would like to discuss with you all also. We also are following closely, as was mentioned by the League, we have a number of self-insured counties, and so we follow closely the workers' compensation presumptions and wanting to make sure that we are doing good and right by our employees, but also making sure that we are properly aligning over time the responsibility of the employer responsibility for those costs with where those costs occur. And so I think that the sustainability of the workers' compensation program is premised on making sure that there's good alignment there in where workplace injuries happen with what employers are accountable for paying for those injuries. Madam Chair and members, I want to amplify the AMC's comments around streamlining mandated processes and reporting. We too would like to engage, and maybe this is sort of a study group conversation. Our members feel strongly that there's a number of public disclosure and reporting requirements that the public, I think that this is both an efficiency issue, but I think more importantly, it's a genuine transparency issue. That some of the current requirements around public disclosure are not really aligned with the way the public looks to access information, which is generally they come to county government websites to look for county government information, and that's not always what the law requires it to be. Most counties do publish the required information on their websites, but we think that there can be some improvement in some of the reporting and disclosure and public information requirements that are in statute and align those in a way that is more efficient. We do take a number of our county members are obviously metropolitan area counties. We do have a position on reform for the Metropolitan Council that was touched on earlier by a number of members. We do not advocate for an elected council, but we do advocate for a majority of the members of the council being elected officials. We also support, as has been cited by others, staggered terms for council members. And so I will, you know, there are other aspects to our concerns on the metropolitan governance structure, and I look forward to be happy to work with all of you on that going forward. And I think first and foremost, I would just end with saying we strongly support the value of the regional governance. Obviously, the benefits of having such has been demonstrated over many decades in Minnesota in the metropolitan area. And we believe that that continued expectation can be strengthened going forward by even better engagement and integration of local elected officials with the work of the council. Madam Chair and members, I will just end there. Happy to take any questions and, you know, just say also it is that we also see our role and responsibility as an organization as a two-way. We both bring information and advocacy to you, but we also see ourselves as a tool, hopefully for all of you, if we can. If you have questions that we can contact and work with our members to seek information that's helpful to you and your decision makers. And we are and do operate as a bipartisan organization, as has been mentioned by other associations as well. Happy to stand for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. I am not seeing any questions at this point. And if I'm missing you, just please shout out. It looks like you are free to go. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next, Dan Larson from the Minnesota Rural Counties.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Dan Larson, and I'm Executive Director of Minnesota Rural Counties. And let me tell you what a pleasure it is to be with you this morning to give you some background on our organization and to share with you some of our goals. So MRC is a nonpartisan 35 county membership organization that advocates specifically for rural county concerns. We are a separate but affiliated organization to the Association of Minnesota Counties, and we have a strong but independent relationship with AMC. So we think of ourselves as the place rural counties can go within AMC to talk about things that are specific to rural counties. And providing the rural county perspective on key issue is a primary overarching concern of MRC, and I hope you will indulge me in some perspective that I think will be beneficial to understanding who we are and what we do. So I saw who was speaking ahead of me on the list, and I knew that broader county perspective would be covered. So I wanted to provide a little different perspective, one that recognizes the need to build better bridges in communicating and understanding varied concerns. So it's no surprise or to anyone on that in this committee or who is participating that any issue that makes its way down the hallways of the state capitol these days is as likely to split along metro-rural lines as it is along party lines. And if you are lamenting the erosion of understanding between metro and rural issues, take heed, because the Minnesota Rural Counties is on the job. Our members understand the erosion of mutual understanding in this regard, as did their founding predecessors who established what was then called the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus in 1997. The goal is to build or renew understanding in St. Paul of important distinctions inherent to the rural culture and economy. And that's a culture and economy that is critical to the success of the state and that our members feel too often is lost or misrepresented on key issues of the day. So the group actually formed over an issue when the state was marching briskly towards a one-size-fits-all wetland preservation approach to wetland preservation and mitigation or replacement ratios for wetlands impacted by road and building projects that would have shut down economic development in greater Minnesota, or many parts of it, I should say. So like many well-meaning proposals of its kind, protecting wetlands sounded like a good idea, but as a concept it was and is, but as a plan it was terrible and clumsy with huge blind spots that actually penalized areas of the state that didn't drain their wetlands in the 30s and 40s. So it was a plan that valued wetland preservation over the preservation of, in many cases, the health, welfare, and safety of rural Minnesotans in vast regions where 50, 60, and in some areas, more than 70% of pre-settlement wetlands still remained. So a voice specific to rural counties' concerns were needed. And that's when a group of five deep rural counties formed and made news by passing and publicizing resolutions declaring the proposed changes were unworkable and that they would not abide by them. That move was controversial, but it opened the door to the message that the new and astronomical cost of wetland replacement put critical plans for hospital, airport, and business expansion on the shelf and out of reach in areas of the state that figuratively float on wetlands and where dry land is actually the benefit. St. Paul, the point here is that St. Paul needed the rural county perspective, and news of that five county movement spread fast. The initial group of five quickly spread to 11, 18, and finally 23 rural counties passed resolutions Builders, that opened the door for other groups, builders, labor, other organizations joined the mix, and the plan was revised. It took 18 months, but those were 18 months well spent. And after that time, Minnesota passed the three-tier mitigation agreement to the Wetland Conservation Act that keeps tighter replacement restrictions in areas where wetlands were drained, and more flexible ratios were wetter areas of the state. So with the three-tier plan becoming a statewide success and really a national model that other states have replicated, MRC provided a rural county perspective that resulted in a better overall product. So I wanna thank you for indulging me that the issue is not the Wetland Conservation Act. The issue is bridging that understanding gap that everybody acknowledges and we think is getting worse. So we're doing our part to help Metro people understand rural sensibilities, and we all wanna always keep an open ear toward the Metro. That's, I think, part of why I've been working with this group since inception. I grew up in South Minneapolis at the end of runway 29 right. So I could almost throw a rock up and hit the planes that were landing over my house. So I've got a metro background, but I've been working with rural interests now for 25 years. So I see both sides, and I see that the gap is there and growing worse. So I just want to make the point that we're trying to do our part to bridge it, and we want to be a resource to anybody, especially metro members, that are looking for a rural perspective on issues. And we know it's our job to reach out to you, but I want to make sure that you know that we're here as a resource. So I know that the chair and members are equally concerned and interested in gaining these perspectives. So so we've got priorities for the year. I'm going to be following up with Peter to get the our priorities into the hands of committee members, but we did send them out to all legislators. So if you have them that way, I apologize for not getting them into the packets, but it's coming. Our priorities for the year include support for adequate funding, transportation funding, with an emphasis on funds that are distributed through the Highway Users Tax Distribution Fund, continuing the great but unfinished work the state has done on closing the broadband access gap, support for Greater Minnesota Community Hospitals, reliable, affordable, and flexible energy for Greater Minnesota manufacturing and homes and businesses, preserving county tax base, recognizing state law as it pertains to allowing counties to deliver health care under the county-based purchasing model, and as it pertains to allowing counties to maintain ditches under the law. So protecting county program aid will also be a key issue for us this year. You guys, you members have a tall task ahead of you. So county program aid, we're going to be working with our colleagues that you've already heard from in letting you know what any cuts or proposed cuts to CPA will do. And we're working directly and energetically on a bill providing an additional $3 million annually to the base for emergency management grants to county emergency managers. Funding these emergency services managers is in drastic need of enhancement. So you may know that a full 75% of these funds have traditionally come from the federal government, but the feds have warned in recent years to expect they will be pulling back on that funding. And managers were already operating on shoestring budgets even before the COVID pandemic hit. So so I'll wrap by saying we wish you all the best as you tackle the important issues, and I'll look forward to working with you as a resource on anything that we can be helpful with.
Thank you very much. I am not seeing any questions. And Ms. We had one other testifier, but I know we're at time right now. Elizabeth Weffel, would you be able to come back next time and testify?
Absolutely. That is okay. Totally fine.
Thank you so very much.
You're welcome.
And then we'll also hear the introductions from our committee staff as well. Thank you all very much for being here. Have a good day. The meeting is adjourned.